Hello, everyone. Good evening. For those of you who were with us on Saturday, you know that we talked about Thich Nhat Hanh and his death, and remembering him and sharing experiences that we had had with his teachings or with seeing him. And everyone seemed to be affected, seemed to have some relationship with him, however distant, even if it was only just being aware of who he was and maybe some small aspect of what they had heard had been said or heard about him. But we didn't mention one of his fundamental particularities and teachings, which he called interbeing. And I think his groups even today are called the circles of interbeing or something. And this term and this way of expressing what he's expressing is very original to Thich Nhat Hanh. He's not saying anything new in terms of what is the traditional Buddhist teachings or the Zen practices, but his way of formulating it is original and singular, this inventing this word interbeing. And he even goes so far to say that to be is to interbe, that there is no being without interbeing. And he thought there should even be a word in the dictionary for that. Now, in our other languages, I'm not sure how this is said. I suppose in French it's, I don't know, entre être or something. And does anyone know what it is in French? Who's familiar with his stuff? Freddie, yeah?
Inter-être.
Inter-être, okay. Makes sense. And in Portuguese, does anyone know what?
Entre ser.
Okay. Same thing, yeah, okay. So what I was thinking about this week, my mind was racing in a million directions with this, this notion of interbeing, because I also recently read a book about quantum theory. Debbie is shaking her head. You read this book recently too, or no? Oh, okay. And happened to see a video between a Rinpoche, a Tibetan Rinpoche, and an American neuroscientist talking. And it was fascinating to hear them talk, because when I read the book about quantum theory, I had this strange feeling that I knew a lot of this already. It made perfect sense to me. Some of it, not at all. Like after I read the book, I said, you know, I know everything and I know nothing about quantum theory now. But I think I could say the same thing about Zen practice and the nature of reality. You know, now I know, and I know that I don't know anything, something like that. The relationship, though, with interbeing, quantum theory, quantum mechanics, our practice, it's quite stunning, actually, that scientists should come upon what we experientially come upon without going through calculations and experiences like they do. We do our own experiences, but what we come upon is that is interbeing, that nothing exists by itself. Everything is in relation to everything else. And so in quantum, quantum physics, they describe, they call it relational. Everything is relational, which changes everything then. That changes how we view the universe, how we view ourselves, how we view the planet, how everything's changed. If we see it as relational, life then is a process, and everything interacts with everything else. And therefore nothing, and in our practice we say, there is no separate self. So we talk about this word emptiness. We use this word emptiness, right? And we say there is no separate self. That's what emptiness means. But it also implies that fullness. It means that everything is full of everything else. It's empty of anything isolated, but it's full of everything else. And with interbeing, that's what Thich Nhat Hanh is pointing at as well. He gives the famous example of looking at a piece of paper and seeing a cloud in it. Because the paper comes from trees, so there's a tree in it, and the tree comes from rain and sun, so there's rain and sun in it. The rain comes from the cloud, so there's cloud in it. I'm simplifying this, right? But that's the whole process he goes through, talking about interbeing, using a simple piece of paper as an example of interbeing, and of emptiness and fullness. So the piece of paper is empty of an isolated existence, but it's full of all of that other, of everything else. And the same is true of us. And this Tibetan Rinpoche talking with the scientist was saying, so how can you convey in a secular way what is always transmitted in Buddhist teachings for the Tibetan Rinpoche, for example? Or for us, we're always talking about the Buddha this, the Buddha that, And the Tibetan Rinpoche said, well, there's this really basic thing that we all say, we all know, appearances can be deceiving, right? Or we say, don't judge a book by its cover in English. And everybody pretty much gets that. You can look at someone and think, this fabulously handsome man, and he's just like so beautifully dressed, and he walks so elegantly. And then he opens his mouth and he's got bad teeth, or he's really mean, or he doesn't correspond to whatever the image is that you had, right? The appearance is deceiving. I thought that's a really pertinent thing this Rinpoche says, because he uses that as an example of how we then in our practice, we don't say that, but we say nothing is what it seems as it is. Right? We say it's empty. It's not what, an apple is not an apple as we think it is, right? Or you are not who you think you are, I'm always telling you. So we're asked to look into it, to see beyond the appearances. And he even goes farther, this Rinpoche, saying, when he's talking about form and emptiness, he said it's very basic. It's like something is there and not there at once. Which, and this in quantum theory, this comes up as well, this exact same thing. Of the scientists have found that things can be and not be at the same time, which doesn't seem possible. But if we look at, this Rinpoche gives the example of a rainbow, which is really not there. There is no rainbow. It's just a conglomeration of causes and effects that are making it appear to be a rainbow. It's, you know, the way that the slant of the light interacting with the particular atmospheric condition, and then our eyes and the lenses in our eyes seeing it a certain way. So it's all these interdependent conditions that make the rainbow. But the rainbow is not really there. So he gives us an example of something being there and not being there. Because for our eyes, it's totally there. The rainbow, it's beautiful. And we really love rainbows. And we think of them as being magical and rare. Partly because of this, it's not really there. No, if we go and try to reach it, it's not there. If we change our position on the earth, the rainbow won't be there anymore. Or he gives the example of a reflection in a mirror. There's nothing in the mirror. You're not in the mirror. It has no substantial existence. A little more difficult is dreams, because he said, you know, basically, so we have this whole way of existing in our dreams at night, and then a whole nother way of existing when we're awake, but yet they're not different, actually. Circumstances are just different. We think of this as being the real world, but the dream world is also real to in a different way, right? I mean, I'm diverging a little bit here because I liked his examples that were really concrete, you know, instead of like complicated things that we sometimes use to talk about emptiness and form and things. So to come back to Thich Nhat Hanh's interbeing, because we are empty of a separate self, so not isolated, we tend to think of we can accept everything is interconnected and interdependent, except me. I'm, you know, this isolated me that has nothing to do with anyone else. And yet, if we really look into it, we can't fully grasp the totality of it, but we can begin to see the crumbling of the facade. That if we start breaking it down and saying, okay, well, what makes me me? Where did I start and where do I end? We can't really find the boundaries. And we know that we are this, what I think of as I, this physical vehicle, is the result of a relational circumstance. Of course, the relational circumstance of our parents, but they are also relational. Their existence is relational. And the existence of the relations with which they are in relation are relational, and the whole thing is connected. In Buddhism, they use the image of Indra's net. They say there's this great net. It comes from the Hindu tradition. Indra being the god of the cosmos or something, has it through a net over the universe. And the net, it's bound together by little beads at each intersection of the strings. And in each of those beads is reflected the other beads. And then, so therefore, in each of the beads is reflected all of the beads and all the reflections of all of the beads. And it's infinite. The reflections are infinite. Which is just another way of saying interbeing. Different image, different words, and yet the ancient Hindus, I don't even know when this predates the Buddha's time, this image, they were saying the same thing that today's quantum physicists are saying. The quantum physicists go through elaborate experiments to, sometimes not so elaborate, but to show this, to come upon these things. And an interesting thing that they say, what this guy who wrote this book, who is a scientist, said, that scientists make their discoveries when reality doesn't correspond to their beliefs. When it corresponds to their beliefs, nothing is discovered, there's nothing new. The discoveries are made when it doesn't correspond. And the same is true for us in our practice. You know, if we sit here and hang tight to our beliefs, the scientists have to put their beliefs on the line. You know, they make hypotheses that go beyond what they think. They try to shake themselves free of how the properties of the world, how they think the properties of the world are. And we're asked to do the same thing in our practice. We're asked to just sit here and not hang on to our thoughts, our opinions, our beliefs, our positions, our projections. Just be here with what is. Not have an idea about what is here, but just be with what is here. And that's when we make the great discovery of the nature of being, of interbeing, let's say. When we're not attached to ourself, to our idea of ourself. That's when we see who we truly are, when we see who the others truly are. Now, I'm sure I haven't really studied Thich Nhat Hanh's interbeing in depth, what he says about it. And I'm sure he talks about it much more profoundly and articulately than I do, because it's his teaching, it's not mine. I'm just borrowing his term. But what I do know, I have seen, he said, he talks about this notion of empty of a separate self and full of everything. That's what interbeing is. And this, you know, I have told the story before about when I told my teacher I didn't know what emptiness was. And I was embarrassed and, you know, disappointed that I was disappointing her because she said I did know what it was. And then finally, she reminded me of something I had told her, and I said, yeah, well, that's not emptiness, that's fullness. My experience was that everything was full. And she said, well, it's the same thing. In order to be full, first it has to be empty. Because if it's full of one thing, one self, one identity, how could it possibly be all those other things? There's no room. It's too small. And our experience, if we look around, is that everything is interdependent. We know that the flowers grow because of sun and water. We know that our heart and our kidneys and our lungs and our liver and our eyes and brain, and it all functions together. It all works together. If one of those things is not working so well, then the others work differently as well. It doesn't mean it won't work, but it changes. It's relational, it's interbeing always. If we only had a brain and no heart, well, the brain would not be able to survive. And that's just with our physical body. If we look around, just to open our eyes and look at the world, we see how everything is interconnected. How if one thing is not, one thing changes. If one person were not on this screen tonight, it would be a different group. When someone arrives, it's a different group. This screen, this notion of being here and not being here, the Zoom thing is wonderful for that, because I feel like you're here with me, but you're not. You're not in this room with me, but you are in this room with me. Now, if I had a fixed idea about what it was to be in this room with me, then I would not be able to say that. Or if I had a fixed idea about who I am, or a more fixed idea, let's say, I'm not claiming to be totally free of my self-identity, but much freer than I was 30 years ago. And even that is moment to moment. There is no 30 years ago, you know, in that sense. But we won't start going into time as well, because it's already enough to talk about being and interbeing. So when we, you know, this Rinpoche, you know, he said, when we have this, when we experience the perceptual illusion of the rainbow, for example, he said that experience is a mini awakening. We don't even think of it like that. We don't realize it, but it is, because we are seeing the interdependence before our eyes and the emptiness before our eyes. We always are, but we don't realize it. One of the experiments in quantum physics, which I'm not really going to go into, but just to tell you how weird it is they, you know, have this, they go through this whole elaborate experiment of, a cat can be awake and asleep at the same time. That's a famous one, which you might have heard of before. But I won't go into that one. A rainbow is much closer to our experience and how we express things and see things. But even something I would not be sitting here talking, it's relational. I'm sitting here talking because of our relation. And you're sitting here listening because of our relation. It's relational. I am not anything apart from that relation. And that's just this aspect of our interbeing. I'm just giving another kind of easier example. But in Thich Nhat Hanh's teachings, it's a way of, he talks about it as a tool to open our hearts and to experience the fullness of life, the fullness of being, the fullness of every moment. You know, on Saturday, Claudia told us that from what she learned at Plum Village, one of the things that stayed with her was waking up every morning and saying, wow, I have 24 hours to have this beautiful day. That, you know, that arises from Thich Nhat Hanh's interbeing, his notion of nothing separate, everything possible, everything full. Each of these minutes, in each of these hours, in each of these days, in each of these people, in each of these hearts, which are not separate from my heart. So that's kind of my riff on interbeing and quantum theory and our very basic Zen sitting practice. Anyone comments or? Questions? Or has anyone read anything more about Thich Nhat Hanh? Yeah, go ahead, Freddie. Yeah.
Thich Nhat Hanh liked his notion of, he put this notion of interbeing because he thought it was more positive than non-duality or non-self. He said, let's put something positive instead of saying, non-self. Let's say something positive, like interbeing. So it's that's his way of saying it. It's more positive, like he said. They say suffering, but I like to say not suffering, but positive things, because we are already living a difficult time. So let's say some positive things.
Yeah, thank you. That's very important. Very, very important. His motivation for presenting it in that way. Yeah. And it's true. It's like seeing it as fullness rather than emptiness. Yeah. Joao?
Good evening, everyone. One of these mornings, when we sit in the morning for Zazen, Dale, he shared with us, he came across, or he knew already, I'm not sure, the Thich Nhat Hanh's formulation or version of the four vows that we sing. It's actually five, and it says, the awakened way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. However innumerable beings are, I vow to meet them with kindness and interest. However inexhaustible the states of suffering are, I vow to touch them with patience and love. However immeasurable the dharmas are, I vow to explore them deeply. However incomparable the mystery of interbeing, I vow to surrender to it freely. This is a
nice. Beautiful. So, do you see the similarities and the differences, or apart from words? I mean, actually, there isn't really any difference. Anyone have any comments on that? And that's the order that they were given in?
This is how Dale shared it with us, yes.
So the order is different than we would chant it, right? Yeah. Dale?
I only want to say, Marlene, she's talking and...
We didn't hear because you...
Sorry. I was asking João if he could repeat the vows, the five vows. Tishnatan. Can you, João?
The awakened way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. However innumerable beings are, I vow to meet them with kindness and interest. However inexhaustible the states of suffering are, I vow to touch them with patience and love. However immeasurable the dharmas are, I vow to explore them deeply. However incomparable the mystery of interbeing, I vow to surrender to it freely.
So, of course, it's the fifth one that is added. And the others we recognize as being just different versions of what we chant, however, not in the same order. And it would be interesting to know if in Vietnamese Zen, they are chanted in this order, his order, or if he rearranged them. I don't know. It would be interesting to know. Because in Japanese, almost, I don't think I've ever come across a version in Japanese Zen that was not in the order that we chanted. So it's interesting. Do you know where he got that, Dale?
I don't remember. I don't think that he said exactly where. I don't think so.
I can feel the same kindness in the way of saying things, the same kindness that Freddie mentioned, because the sentences here are kind and more soft. They are not affirmative.
Yeah. Which is very much his teaching, Thich Nhat Hanh's teaching, and the spirit of it. Which is why it touched, and will touch so many people.
But it can take you a lifetime to learn to say things this way or to talk this way.
Some people would say it many lifetimes. At the same time, just one moment, just this moment, and then the next moment, and the next one. It's like we say, or Suzuki said, you know, there are no enlightened people, there are only enlightened action. And so in any moment, we can express ourselves in this way, we can remember this, we can say this, we can meet people with kindness in any moment, any moment.
I think we can breathe and try every moment, every meeting, every day that begin. And it's that the word that Joa used so many ways is cultivate this, like, cultivate this. I feel that by me, I need to cultivate this coming to other people all the time. When I begin my day and I go to speak with someone that I don't know, I feel that I prepare me for that. It's not a artificial, but it's a, I think before that, I breathe before, and then I go. It's we need to cultivate that, because I remember the last Dharma talk from Sensei Chua. Where he talk about the beast. We need to train this person, this thing that we are, because we are also the beast. We are all the things, and this training, it's one of the reasons that I feel it's one of the it's the reason because I'm here with you. I don't know if I speak clear, but
thank you. Ready?
you talked about seeing rainbows, and that maybe the rainbow is not there, but it's in our eyes. The first time I went abroad, I went to London, and I thought that everyone was nice to me because I was coming from France or from a place where they could talk to me. And I thought that everyone was nice and it was easy to speak to people. When I went back to France, I kept this same open mind, and I quickly realized that it was not the people that were nice. It was me. I was nice. So I didn't see the rainbow. And when you see the rainbow, people are nicer. So I don't know.
Claudia?
It's you know, I'm coming back on something you said about dreams, and you said that because you said that the world of dreams maybe was the real world, and because we suppose that we are in the real world and that dreams are not the real world. And something happened to me, I don't know, maybe 1 week ago, and it's maybe more, maybe 10 days ago, but I had a dream, and I felt something so strong in that dream that it gave me a strength in my real life. I mean, okay, so I don't know what is real life, but in this life. And since I had this dream, I'm not the same anymore. It's something happened with that feeling, with what I felt in the dream. So now I know it's possible. And I know I can, okay, I know that exists and I just have to find it. It's so weird and it's so strong. So it's just, it makes me think to what you said about the world of dreams and the world of this world and the world of dreams.
Yeah, I mean, that's really a beautiful example, because we know that we accept more or less, okay, so what we're dreaming, it's our mind that's creating it. You know, psychoanalysts say, even, you know, you are everything in the dream is you. So if it's a car, it's you. If it's a ball, it's you. If it's a dog, it's you. The other people, it's you. It's all just elements of you in the dream. Which is interesting because, okay, the same thing is true in this waking life. It's the same mind. It's the same mind. It's different circumstances. And so fabulous that, Claudia, you should have this experience where something from the dream has real effect in your waking life, you know, and often maybe not so directly, but, you know, if we do in psychoanalysis, we work with dreams, you know, it's like, and it does have real meaning. What happens in the dreams ends up really being powerful. and having effects in your daily, in your waking life. And vice versa. Right? So stuff that the stuff of your dreams is also coming from this waking life. And all of it is without substance. You know, all of we will Shakespeare's, you know, we are the stuff of dreams. Our existence, our who we think we are, is it's like dreams. It has no, well, let's see, it's this beautiful, and let's try to stay positive like Thich Nhat Hanh, you know. It's this beautiful, we are this beautiful dream. We are that. This fabulous dream. Yeah, maybe this is like too much, I don't know. Maybe I'm not clear enough about it to really clarify it. I mean, to express it more clearly, maybe something like that. Although all of your comments have been clear, so you're clear on it to some degree or another. Yeah, I haven't looked into enough Thich Nhat Hanh's thing about interbeing, but I know somewhere that he talks about the Heart Sutra and interbeing in relation to that, which makes total sense. Freddie?
Yes, it's because in the Heart Sutra, there's all the notion of Buddhism. And that's why, of course, he talks about it in it. Because non-self is, so in the Heart Sutras, there's all the different notion of the Buddhism in one, in only one poem. Mm. That's why.
Yeah, and I think he addresses the issue of emptiness. Because Avalokiteshvara sees the emptiness of all the five aggregates, and so that would seem to be in contradiction with interbeing, but in fact, it's not. It's the same thing. Something like that, probably.
Yes, it's the same thing. Just interbeing is a spin of doing it positively.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's the same thing.
I have this idea in my head about something that was said before, and I have this idea, it keeps coming back. I have this idea that it's a book, a title of a book by Thich Nhat Hanh, but I'm not sure, and it's peace is every step. So and the way I hear that is each step, each moment, each whatever is an opportunity, is a possibility for peace. That's the word I think he uses. In the evening gatha, we also talk about opportunity. So each step, each moment, each thing that is presented to us, I don't know.
He even says, life is a walk. When you walk, every step is where you're going. Life is a walk.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it really is, you know, it's his version is it's very energizing, it's very inspiring. And goes against, and that's why, as we were saying on Saturday, we all have this kind of stereotypic view of his disciples smiling all the time and being happy all the time, and everything is beautiful and perfect. And it is, I mean, it is. And it's not. So again, an experience of how can two things be here and not here? So how can it be beautiful and how can it be not? How can it be happy and how can it be not happy? How can I be and not be? Interbeing. Well, I feel like there was a lot said. Maybe that's a good place to stop and do our chant our vows, keeping in mind Thich Nhat Hanh's version, and see if that changes how we chant them. Thank you. I remind you there's a study group on Saturday for those of you who are participating.
And I will send a document. I just need to type it. It's coming.